You're listening to the good.
Don't call me Paino.
The bad.
Absolute.
And the rugby.
Folded like a deck chair.
With Paino, Lord, and the Husk. I don't know what that means.
Welcome once again to the good, the bad, and the rugby. I hope you're well. I hope you're surviving. My name is Alex Payne. It's great to be back with you once again this week. A new week, a new dawn, new challenges, new fun and games. And we just want to start very quickly by saying thank you very much to everybody who got in touch last week after that extraordinary episode with the great David Pocock. It really was one of a kind interview, and definitely backing up the fact, as a great player, he is also a great man off the field as well. Eye-opening, informative, and fascinating in equal measure. Three words that we don't often use when associating this show with James Haskell. How are you? You're looking, you've gone back to the bushy half. You're looking fairly sort of newborn lamb.
Yeah, well, we just can't get access to any barbers, can we? So I might get Chloe to have a go at it, but I'm not sure. Other than that, I'm good. I've joined OnlyFans. That's the new exciting thing on the horizon. And is that
like porn? Is that where you sell your bits for a fiver?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not necessarily for a fiver. I've got stuff all over my top, actually. I just realised. I've got chilli powder on my top.
You've just been doing OnlyFans?
No, yeah. That'd be white if I've been doing OnlyFans. I've joined it, and I haven't actually gone live yet. We're going live on Wednesday, and it's going to be like health, fitness, nutrition, mental health stuff, some DJing or whatever. And already someone's asked me if they could watch me wank off. I'm like, mate, I haven't even started.
What's the price on that?
Well, I mean, there's going to be a punchy price on it. If I'm doing cameo videos for 160, then someone watching me knock one out, it's going to be at least £200.
Right, good. Be amazed if any of that makes the opening of the show. I'm going to go back to eye-opening, informative and fascinating because, fingers crossed, that is what we are looking forward to this week. I'm going to go with the lesser-spotted Vunipola, if I can do that, mainly because your younger brother sort of, well, he sort of manages to capture the headlines wherever he goes. Mako, 63 England caps, 6 Lion tests, the elder statesman of English rugby right now. How are you, boss? It's very nice to see you.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm good, thank you. And when you put it like that, it made me feel my age.
Well, you know, we're all feeling old and tired and hanging in there a bit. I will go so far as to say I think you're pretty much the only professional player at the moment who doesn't have a book out or a podcast, which makes this extremely exciting because there's a lot to get into with you. But how are you, first of all? How is life? How is lockdown 14?
It's good. At the minute, I'm still coming back from a little bit of Achilles injury, a bit of tendonitis in my Achilles, so not really training yet, but being busy with the kids during lockdown. Luckily, nurseries are still open, so some days we don't have two kids, it's just one. I don't know if there's much to be delved into here. You kind of put pressure on me when trying to follow up from Pocock.
You'll be surprised. And, you know, there's so much to talk to you about, and I know you're not necessarily the guy who runs to the microphone. Is that a thing, actually, with you? Are you someone who finds the media tiresome, or are you someone who, you know, would like to do more of it and doesn't? What's your love affair with press and TV and radio like?
I don't really mind, but it's probably something that doesn't come natural to me in terms of when I have a younger brother like I do, he takes most of the limelight away from me. So sometimes it's nice to have him there, but there are moments where you want to just let him know, keep your mouth shut a little bit.
Good. We might get into a bit of that. And obviously, you mentioned the Achilles. I mean, and you mentioned the kids, etc. What else are you doing at the moment? Are you doing watercolours? Are you tending the garden? Are you repainting the house? What are you actually doing on a day-to-day basis to pass?
He looks like he's in prison with that backdrop. So are we talking to you live from Wormwood Scrubs? Or something? What the fuck? What the hell have you been doing?
Hey, this is the only wall with nothing on it that I can have as a backdrop. The rest of the walls, there's too much stuff in there I don't want to be putting on, do you know what I mean?
Oh, wait, is the Inland Revenue finally caught up with you? You're for the Polar Enterprises of hidden in a bunker?
No, it's also because it's next to the Wi-Fi, so hopefully then it doesn't break up. But no, oh, my missus would be gutted you said that. She quite likes the wall.
No, I like it. Listen, I like it. It does just look like you're doing some sort of proof of life video, like you're having to like do a video of like I'm in some underground bunker. But Alex, you asked Macko what he's been doing. Classic Macko, stash, never out, free stash, free Adidas jumper, free Samsung headphones from 5 years ago. Mate, honestly, spends no
These are the only headphones. These are the only headphones that fit my ears properly. As you would know, they're quite large. And yes, it's quite cold at the minute, so I'm wearing a jumper and it happens to be Adidas. Why would I spend money when I can get it for free?
Sponsor's dream.
That's your motto. That's your motto. Why would I spend money when I can get it for free?
There's not much I can get for free, though, that's the thing.
So what have you been doing? I mean, literally, are you just doing daddy daycare and icing the ankle? Or have you got other stuff going on?
There's not much going on, to be fair. I've just finished my long-distance university course that they kind of do through the RPA. So that's a bit of a weight off my shoulders. So
what have you studied?
It's leadership management. Leadership management and business. So Anthony Watson was actually doing it at the same time as me, and we got our results back together, and he was glowing about his, and I didn't get as well as his. So, but that's done now, and at the minute, I'm just trying to figure out what next I want to learn, really. Maybe learn a guitar, but there's not much time at the moment. Two kids, anytime I sit down to watch TV, I get the missus shouting at me saying, get off my ass.
Wait, how was the management course in terms of helping you keep your temper and not go? Because I imagine you would be one of the angriest bosses that I've ever met.
No, I'll be like one of the quiet ones that you don't want to like get on the wrong side. But yes, I would have a bit of a temper as well.
Macko, we've seen you manage it. Tag Furlong's arse has never been the same again. And I remember trying to score against Ireland and getting held up and you going, oi, score the try, you fucking pussy. And I'm like, but Macko, we got held up. And you went, quick as a flash, you went, next job, Hass, next job. And I was like, you can't just insult someone and then when they come back go, whoa, calm down, Hass, you're getting a bit angry. I was like, no, you got angry.
Are you a qualified manager?
But, yeah, not a qualified manager, but I'm not really sure what it means, to be honest. A tick box, a bit.
Is the temper a thing, Macko? Is that something you're known for? Are we being misled?
No, I do have a bit of a temper, and Hask is right that I do lose my head a bit sometimes on the field, and I can't really remember what he's on about there, scoring a try, but it's something that I'm trying to work on, and also Ty deserved that slap on the ass. I was right next to him, shouting at him to leave the ball alone, and he's still there, so he deserved that.
No, it was my final international, Macko. It was Ireland at Twickenham. And do you remember we had three drives and like I was on the back of the ball and I nearly got over the line. And you were so frustrated. You bollocked me. And then I was like, we were walking back to take the penalty and I was like, Macko, just a question. You went, ooh, Hask, just relax, brother. But I never thought you had too bad a temper. I just always thought you were very passionate, right?
Probably passionate is a nice way of putting it, and some people think I got temper, and some people think I'm over passionate. And I think the younger you are, you think I'm got a temper, and people that know me a bit longer, they realise that it's just passion.
Is that a thing on the pitch, though? And can you remember the last time you felt like you were slipping out of the zone that all players need to be in? And do you have a technique? I mean, I always hear about, I think it was Kieran Reid who said he stamps three times and they talk about blue zone and red zone, and I don't quite understand all of it. But do you have a technique if you're getting mightily pissed off out there?
I kind of just breathe. So one thing they do is just focus on your breath. Take a deep breath and then try not to think that someone made a mistake on purpose. But most games I'll find something to be frustrated about, and it's very hard to go through a game where I don't actually think, why the hell is he doing that? And Hass would probably say there's been a lot of times where this happened around him or to him.
And how much are you using those techniques in the home life at the moment, not being able to get out there, having two young kids, et cetera, et cetera? I'd love your techniques in that environment.
In this environment, I just kind of try to zone out a bit, not let anything get too much on me. And luckily, Mr. does a lot of the parenting and she's quite good with playing with him. When I come home, I just play on the fact that I've been in work, training hard and doing loads of weights, so I'm a bit tired. It seems to work, but there are days where she just loses her mind and says, get off my ass.
That old chestnut. We are genuinely thrilled to have you on this show, mainly because your younger brother, who we'll come on to, basically portrayed you as someone who wakes up for about 10 to 15 minutes a day. Hask, is that unfair, or is that a fairly accurate representation of Macko, certainly in an England camp?
I think mainly in England camp, if he's not on FIFA, Macca would be in some sort of padded snuggle suit. So when you get your England stash, right? So when you get England stash, there's like two or three items that you probably never wear. Like, we've got high metabolism, we're always quite hot. And there's like a pair of like quilted bottoms and a really oversized coat. And no one ever wears the coats because you've got no time. You're very rarely watching. Macca lived in what looked like a boiler suit where he sort of merged the snuggle suit bottoms to the thing, creating some sort of sleep outfit. And basically his nickname was Snorlax because he would get up, eat, go back to sleep, get up, train the house down, go back. And you would just see him in between sleeps. That was his life. That's what his autobiography should be called. My Life Between Sleeps.
Guilty?
Yeah, the coat one is definitely guilty. It's the nicest one and the warmest one, so I'm always going on. Most boys, like, I think they just wear the hoodie and they do a lot more walking than me, but in camp, there's not much to do, to be honest. Obviously, you play FIFA and see the lads a little bit, but after that, then I've got to get my rest in, otherwise I get too tired for the sessions.
I thought it was, but I think it's hard on the recovery.
Oh, there's recovery as well.
And tell me about the FIFA. So where are you in the sort of the table of FIFA gurus within that England camp? We heard quite a lot about Luke Cowan Dickey, and I think it's Call of Duty, etc. Where do you sit in the FIFA table?
I back myself to be the best there, to be honest, which is pretty sad, seeing as I've got my father of two and one of the oldest ones there. So it's pretty bad that I'm one of the best FIFA players there.
But your challenges would be?
Ollie Lawrence. So the last campaign we had, me and him played pretty much three or four times every day. Anyone, really. Most boys like COD, though. They all like the shooting games. That's not me.
Right.
Wasn't it Danny? You and Danny Kerr used to have the ultimate competitions. I remember there used to be someone that used to challenge you. Was it Genji? Is Genji quite good, or am I making that up?
DC used to play, yeah. There's a mode on there called Ultimate Team, and he used to play a bit on there, and we'd chat about that a bit. Genji plays a bit. He thinks he's like tiki-taka, Barcelona style, and when I beat him scoring headers, he gets angry because he's like, that's not football, but he's just angry because he lost. But Lenny plays a little bit as well, so there's a few boys that play, but as you get older and you have kids, you obviously tend to get away from PlayStation, which is the opposite for me. I actually play a little bit more.
Well, you say that because Jack Knoll basically hid in his gym while he's got his kid, and then he got himself a hyperbaric chamber. You're not telling me that your missus lets you get away with coming in and disappearing and playing FIFA, does she?
No. She's not that kind. She actually nearly smashed the PlayStation once, and that was probably the closest I come to crying. So it wasn't a good day, but yeah, she's not a fan of the PlayStation. She can tell when it's on as well.
Quite right, keep you in check. I want to get back to the beginning of this, really, that you, not the lesser spotted, but it's really nice to have you on because we don't hear a lot from you. Is there a reason for that? I mean, are you someone who sort of, when the media guys come along and say, right, Macca, you're up, you slip on the coat and you quietly go out the back door?
I tend to just keep it quite simple and pretty boring, to be fair. So they end up just saying, oh, we want to see the other brother, not that one. Right. So whenever we have like media stuff, they obviously prep us beforehand and they say this, say that. And most of the time I say exactly what they want me to say and I get on with it and get out of there. So I wouldn't say I'm a big fan of media day or going and speaking to the media. And plus I haven't got that much to say, to be honest. I don't do much outside of rugby.
That's very interesting, because I wondered whether it was just a shutdown, I'd rather crack on and do other things, or whether you're happy towing the line because ... or whether actually you are someone who's frustrated not to be able to say the things you want to say because of the media handbooks that you guys all get given.
Oh, don't get me wrong. Like, I obviously have things I want to say, but most of the stuff that people want to say, and they do, if they do say it in the media, then it gets blown up, and it's just sometimes I just don't really see what the point of the hassle is, so I kind of stay away from that and just say the boring stuff, what they don't want to hear, and then get out of there.
Right.
But you'll turn up for a paid appearance like you wouldn't believe.
Hey, who wouldn't? I'm trying to feed two kids here.
Yeah. Oh, don't get me wrong. I mean, I turn up for anything. I turn up to open you an envelope.
It's interesting. You've mentioned the bro a couple of times, and we've portrayed you as someone who likes to sleep. When we had Billy on, he basically just spoke about how much he ate. I mean, is that how you cut it between the two of you? You've got most bases covered in that regard. You take nap time and he takes feed time.
He sleeps quite a bit himself, to be fair, but fair play to my mum and dad. They did well feeding us when we were younger because, yeah, as he's mentioned, that we can both put some food away.
look where you've ended up. It seems to have worked. How is the brother? And actually, funny enough, when we had him on the other day, he mentioned that he's a dad. I mean, how is he coping? How many tips have you handed down?
Not that much. Well, his wife and my missus speak quite a bit, and they obviously... she helps here and there, but he's actually all right. I think he's taken to it a lot better than I thought he would. He can't cook, so I didn't know how that would happen with obviously his missus being bedridden for a couple of weeks. But he's been quite good. And the little boy, Judah, he's growing. He's getting big already. He's looking long, and he's going to take after his dad for sure.
Which is very good to hear. I can't imagine you've seen a lot of them, but are you doing bubbles and things? Do you live nearby? Is there a bit of pot leaning over the garden fence and swapping tips?
No, he lives about 10 minutes from me, and I probably should go and say hello to him on the way to training, but with all this lockdown stuff, at the minute, I think we just got the childcare support for him, but that's with my parents, so they're the only ones really that we see.
And how is the bond between the two of you? Because he was pretty open, I'm sure you caught it. He said when he came on last time, he said, him and me, talking about you, didn't really get on, and that was my fault, because I'd never make the effort. I'd never listened to him because I thought I knew the crack. I listened to critique him rather than listen to him. That is one thing I've definitely improved on. What kind of happened before was, ... It was mainly we were very competitive with each other, but maybe we didn't support each other as best we could. And that's definitely something I felt I didn't do for my brother. As modern rugby players go, he is about as open and honest as you can find in a modern sportsman. Has Judah done wonders in terms of the two of you chatting more?
I wouldn't say the most talkative anyway, to be honest. So I'll text him, or we got a group on WhatsApp, and I'll say, oh, morning and stuff like that. But I wouldn't say we spoke
real,
more.
Real close more, stuff, is it? Real long conversation.
I wouldn't call that living in each other's pocket, necessarily.
No,
how is the relationship between the two of you now, though? Because he was very open and honest about it, and it felt like the bonds were regrowing or being rebuilt.
Yeah, like we don't talk much, that's for sure, but I don't really talk full stop. But in terms of like bonds, like just because we don't talk doesn't mean he's not the person I fall to when I'm in trouble, or when he needs trouble, he comes to me and stuff like that. So we always had each other's back, but... In terms of texting, we wouldn't talk every day. In training and stuff, we probably wouldn't even talk every day either. So it's getting better, but part of it is just because I just tend to do my bit and go home. And he's more of the social one, and he'll try and see what the boys are up to and ask more questions.
So that's how you like it? How it is how you like it?
It is. It's comfortable for me, but also I don't want him to think that we're not close, and... I don't think he thinks that, to be honest.
Is that because as well you're the older one and you've sort of always kind of been in charge? Does that play a role?
A little bit. When he says about how sometimes I would say something and he wouldn't listen, he'd listen to kind of critique more than he would listen. That's just been him being a little brother. And when we were younger, whenever my parents were away or someone had to take charge, it'd always be me. So it'd always be me telling him what to do, and there's only so much you can take. As you know, with him, he's a bit big-headed. Not big-headed, but he doesn't like listening to people. And whenever I said something, even though it made sense, he'd try and argue it. So, but no, it's all good, I think.
I think Bill's like somebody, I don't know if you agree, he's sort of got to find his own way. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, some people can be told and want to do it, but if you're sort of... You kind of have to find your own way of getting there. Like, you know, I've sometimes like that, but I know lots of people, you share something with them and they go, oh no, I'm not, fuck off, I'm not going to do it. And then they come around to your way of thinking, but they had to find their own path.
Yeah, exactly that. He won't agree with it straight away. He'll figure it out himself, and then he'll come back, and it might not be the same, but he'll be there or thereabouts.
You know, you said about the fact that you know you're he's the talkative commercial brother and you're the quiet brother. We actually talked to him about this, and I remember messaging you at the time to get you on, because I think you listened to it and you were sort of, I said you were the more serious brother, and maybe I felt you were the more Tongan brother and he was the more kind of commercialized, westernized brother. And Billy basically said, because you basically taken to Wales, wasn't it, and brought up there, and he was brought up somewhere else. Is that right?
Yeah, so when we were younger, he was quite young, and my parents wanted to go back and finish university, but they couldn't take both of us because it'd be too hard. So they ended up taking me to New Zealand and leaving my brother back in Tonga with my grandparents. So he grew up with my grandparents and my aunties and uncles on my dad's side, and I was obviously away with my parents, so I wouldn't, they were a lot harsher on me. My parents were, they told us that they were a lot stricter on me and then my grandparents were on my brother. So when we came back, because he was the youngest one there, he was a baby and everyone was like spoiling him and stuff. So it took him a couple of years to kind of realize he's a younger brother and he's got to learn his way.
Was that why he was 140 kgs at 12 years old?
It probably was, yeah. When you're in Tonga, you don't know what they're going to feed him. So a lot of yams, a lot of pork. So he did grow a little bit bigger than me. And he's always been bigger than me, so that's probably why.
When you reconnected as a family, did he have to go through a bit of a sort of harsh retraining, you know, with your parents? Or did he just sort of get away with it because by then it was too late, kind of thing?
Yeah, he kind of got away with it a little bit, but he also had to realise that he couldn't just get exactly what he wanted. And my parents told us that when we kind of got back together as a family, me and him didn't really get along straight away. It took him a while to kind of understand the bond of a big brother, little brother, and eventually it did happen. And we did play together, but we also fought quite a lot.
Right. What's it like fighting with a 140 kg younger brother? Is it wisdom over brawn, or is it sometimes a bit more of a challenge?
Most of the time, wisdom over brawn. I guess he kind of didn't realise how strong he was when we were younger, but there was one time, and he still goes on about it now, where he kind of pinned me down in a wrestling move, and I had to kind of tap out. And from then, he's kind of said that he's the strongest one. But I'll always say that he jumped me before he even said go. So before my dad said start, he's already jumped me and like from behind, he's got me, so...
Sorry, he thought your dad said. What role was he playing in this?
Well, because we used to fight a lot, and my parents just got sick of it. So my dad just made us wrestle, or like wrestle in the living room. And my mum was like, no, you can't do that. But he said, oh, when I say go, then you start. And before he even said to go, my brother's already jumped me and pinned me down. And he's quite big at the time, and I couldn't get him off.
I reckon there's a commercial opportunity there. That's sort of pay-per-view, I imagine. It's really interesting, Mac. I mean, how does your relationship, yours and Billy, differ with your dad now?
I'm quite similar to my dad in that it's not just Billy that I don't really speak to. I do speak to my parents, and because obviously they spend a lot of time with my kids. But if there's some sort of like family gathering, I like to just be the quiet one and they do all the talking. My dad's the same, so I'd say I'm like him in that, and the relationship's not that different, to be honest.
Marco, is it fair to say that Billy's like your mum and you're a bit like your dad? Your dad sort of stands on the edge of the party watching on, and your mum's sort of in the middle? Because I was obviously lucky to go across to Tonga, and what an amazing place and what an amazing family you've got, and your mum's like... unbelievable. And I was a bit too scared to talk to your dad, but your mum and I got on really well. And she seems to be kind of like the real sociable one, where your dad's sort of looking on. Is that right?
100%, yeah. So when we do have stuff like a wedding or get family gathering, my mum would be the one hosting and be in the middle, and my dad would be just away in the corner somewhere. Usually most of the men would do that anyway. They just go off by themselves and just sit there. And some of the time, they won't even talk. They just sit there and grunt, really. And don't know what they say.
You see, I wanted to ask something, because you know you said about your dad obviously being the ringleader and getting you two to, like, fight to the death, right? Is it true, because I saw this, is it true in the early days that you were both playing and you'd lost a game, and in the car on the way home, you were eating chips and curry, and according to Billy, you were messing around and your dad stopped the car and made you run home? Is that true?
Yeah, it is, yeah. And it's funny now, but when I look back to when it was just, as a kid, you don't really understand what he was going on about and why he made us do it, but it's obviously worked out for the best. And
what was the story? So tell us the full story, because I'd love to hear it from your mouth.
So we've obviously played a game, and we didn't play very well. We were walking around a lot. Back in those days, well, it was pretty similar to now, where fitness wasn't the best. So we ended up just walking a lot, and obviously my dad watching it, he kind of always wanted us to do our best, and he felt like we weren't. So then in the car, he didn't think we took the loss as we should, and we weren't as gutted about it as we should have been. So when we were messing about in the back, he had enough, stopped the car, and just made us run back home from where we were, which I don't really know how far it was, but when we used to live in Wales, our house was at the top of a hill, so it wasn't nice going up that hill at the end.
It's like Mr. Miyagi. Only because my son was watching Karate Kid the other day. It's that sort of tough love in order to get you to the top kind of thing. It's interesting. What's extraordinary about it is the way you describe your relationship with Billy, and yet the way that you two play together is extraordinary. Have you worked that bit out as to, you know, I suppose the effectiveness of you as a combo, but without necessarily living in each other's pockets as brothers?
I think that's probably what's helped it, is because we are so different, we're able to understand each other a bit more, and we have to think about it a little bit. But when it comes to stuff on the field, it's pretty much kind of second nature. I think we've grown up together, and we played rugby on the fields, in the parks together for however long. So when we were on the pitch there, it helped as well, because we kind of say just one word in tongue and here and there, and he'll understand what I mean, and I'll understand what he means. So having that extra language where it's pretty much like shorthand, where you just cut out all the communication, and it's just like a little eyebrow, like give him a nodly head, and he knows what I want him to do, and he'll kind of figure it out from there.
Do you have a row? Sorry, Alex. Do you have a row in Tonga during training that we don't know about?
Oh, yeah. All the time, yeah. So sometimes, especially when I get angry, I just go quiet. And he knows that. So then he'll end up just talking to me in Tonga and be like, why are you shouting around like that? Or why is your face like that? And I'll just be like, I'll tell him exactly what it is. And then we won't talk about it. But then after the training, then he'll come up and say, like, we're trying to figure out what happened.
I'd hear you say Tonga, then Haskell, and then Tonga. And then go quiet and
I didn't even say this. No.
I was like, about Billy? Why is Mako not talking to me? And I could see both you about looking at me. And he goes, oh, he's saying that he really likes you. He wants to play FIFA with you. I was like, no, he fucking doesn't.
That's never happened. I don't know what you mean.
I was going to ask, just before, because we move on, I wanted to, you know, this is the story about the curry. It's interesting because obviously you said you're quite quiet and not that emotional. Is it fair to say that the last time you cried was when you were running back up that hill? Because Billy, I just want to get this to the record, Billy said that you were running full of curry and crying. Is that true?
No, that wasn't the last time. I've definitely cried since then, but no, I did cry whenever I got frustrated and angry. Obviously, I couldn't do anything to my dad, so I just start crying. I'd be like, why are we doing this? Like, why the hell are we doing this? We just played a game, running up. And my brother would just be quiet and just keep doing it and just get on with it.
And I'd get like, angry.
Why are we doing this?
And I'd get angry and question.
Yeah, I'd be the one questioning him the whole time. Yeah.
And what would your dad say to that? Because, I mean, like I said, your dad's like, obviously, like a real strong patriarchal figure. Yeah. I'm like, what does he do to that? Like, just gives you more of a stern look?
Oh, he just ignores it because he keeps telling me the story that he was exactly the same with his dad when he was younger. So he's like, oh, that's just me when I was younger. So,
when was the last time you cried? Can you remember?
Oh, mate. I nearly cried the other day. I was watching a Netflix series, Bridgerton. Flipping out.
Is that any good?
A rom-com?
It's all right, yeah. It is a rom-com. Missus was watching it, and obviously she'd be watching in the room, and I'd be like peering over. She starts explaining, and then I get interested, so I'm like, oh, this is all right. And then obviously what gets me the most is when they start doing stuff like with kids. Obviously I have kids on myself, and like I don't want to spoil anything, but there's parts of it with them as kids, and it's not very nice. Nothing like abusive or anything, but it's not very nice, and you just feel sorry for the kid, and I'm always like nearly tearing up.
Why? Because you've got visions of this fat little Tongan bloke running up a hill. Don't tell me that through the good, the bad, and the rugby, that we're going to unveil that secretly you wanted to be a ballet dancer and you're an artist and your dad made you fight your brother and all he wanted to do was dance and he made you beat your brother and this is what's happened. Is that true?
Marco Elliott in his ballet shoes.
I've got nowhere near enough balance for that or physical ability to even jump that high with my legs, so no.
But the thing is, that's not true, because I remember there's a thing here, because you actually went, I know Alex will probably cover a bit earlier about how you got there, but you obviously went to Millfield, right? And talking about your balance and your skills, even if you were a bigger kid, not quite as big as Billy, you had your coach, John Mallett, and he said, you were a bundle of talent, you were big, but very little of what you did was about your size. He wanted to sidestep, he wanted to run, he wanted to kick the ball. right? That sounds like someone wanting to break free. I don't know about you.
No, mate. I just wanted to be a back, mate. You know that, don't you? It's a lot easier being a back than it does a forward. So
yeah, it's too much running for you, mate. Too much running to be a back.
I know, yeah. Oh,
have you always been stuck up front, Mako, or have you ever dalliance in the back row, etc.?
Obviously, I'd try and play in the back row when I was younger, and I'd play a bit. I used to stand in the backs when I was younger as well, but I always knew that I'd always end up in the front row. I was always the fattest kid in the team. So,
yeah. What gave you that thing? I don't think you had to call Inspector Morse to solve that mystery. Oh, I think I'm going to end up in the front row. You reckon? You're fucking eating. but you did have a bit of a naughty party trick, didn't you? Which was like scoring drop goals blindfolded with a coat over your head, wasn't it? Some sort of special party trick.
Yeah, well, it wasn't that hard. I just stand right in front of the post and kick it from there. But it was a way of me getting out of training. If I can get it, then obviously the coach will let me off. So I'm like, all right, sweet.
Shut up. Please explain this from the beginning. What you were bargaining with your coach. He was like, running. You're like, oh, no. Kicking. If I get it over the poster, I can go in. And is that it?
Yeah, I do that now, mate. But obviously, can't really get away with it. But when I was at school, I'd always be like, oh, if I get this in, I'm done. And they'd be like, yeah, all right. Not thinking I can get it, obviously. And when you put something like missing a bit of training in front of me, then I'm going to try my best to get out of it. So, more often than not, I'd get it. But
mate, I wish I had them skills.
There was very few times they actually let me off the rest of the session.
You're often, when people talk about those up front who can nudge a goal, you're always at the top of that list. I mean, would you back yourself as a goal kicker in a top flight game?
Oh, yeah, 100%. What game was we played? We played again for England, and obviously Faz is first choice, and then we've got Fordy if he's playing, and those who are playing together, and he's second choice. I always put my name as third choice kicker, but I back myself to be best kicker in the forwards for definite anyway.
Amazing. Have you ever done it? You often see those. I'm trying to think if you go back to the 70s, John Taylor with his whopping sideburns and was nudging them over from the touchline. Have you ever kicked in a top flight game?
No, never. I'm also very scared to do so because I don't want to get abused for missing it as well.
Right.
Have you not chipped a ball in a game before? I think I've seen you do that, haven't I?
Oh, I've kicked loads, yeah. I've kicked loads in a game, but not actually kicking for goal. Actually, I'll tell you a story where we played Munster away in semi-final and I had the ball and we had about 6-man overlap and I turned around, seen them, and I just kicked the ball. The ball goes out in touch and Ashley's chasing it. As he's chasing it, I just hear him go, for fuck's sake, why the fuck's he kicked it? And just kept going. I'm like, oh my God. It was half time as well. So instead of chasing the ball, I just ran straight past him into the change room.
Straight to the halftime orange. I would definitely back you as someone who can put boot to ball better than Cruiser, who probably should never have got the ball to his pedal ever again. I can't remember what game that was.
He's lucky when he catches the ball, to be fair.
Very true. Have you heard from him out in Japan?
Yes, I speak to him every now and then. He's loving life out there, to be fair to him. He had a good time over the festive period. They went skiing, I think, New Year's Eve or New Year's Day. And he's just loving it out there.
Okay. Mako, I've got a scenario for you, right? I've got to put it to you. Let me just paint a picture for you. Okay, it's the World Cup final, the one that just went. It's England versus South Africa. We're equal. It's three. We need just a drop goal to win, right? We're near the 22. You're out of breath. Shock, right? You're walking from one route to the other, right? Okay. And Owen Farrell standing one side. You're having a minute, right? And for some reason, the scrum half has passed you the ball, and it's only a few seconds to go. Would you go for the drop goal? Would you shit your pants and carry it?
I'd love to say I go for the drop goal, but I know that I'd probably get the ball, panic, and then I'll just try to get a carry in so then Faz can kick it. Because if I miss that, I would never hear the end of that.
But if you won it...
If you got it...
Yeah. See, the benefit doesn't outweigh the what happens afterwards.
Oh, hey, that's a Hail Mary. I mean, I think it's the correct answer, but I'd love you to say, do you know, I quite fancy my chances.
If it was before half time, I'd go for it, definitely. But no.
I want to get back to you in New Zealand, first of all. So was that because your parents went back to study? Is that right? Where did you live?
Yes.
How did that sort of materialise? How long were you there for?
So they were studying in Wellington, which is where I was born. and I got family over there, so they ended up living with them. And when they were in New Zealand,
did your dad play as well?
Yeah, I can't remember what team, but when we were there in 2017, I actually went around with the family who they live with, and they were showing me like the grounds and where they used to play, where they used to, like the dorms they used to live in, and the little flat they had as well. So I don't remember much of it. I think I was either 3 or 4 when we left, but it was good just to see them.
Yeah. And did you then get back to Tonga, pick up Billy? Because how did you get from New Zealand to Wales? Because that would have been, was that the 99 World Cup? Your dad obviously went over with Tonga. How did you then end up living in Wales?
When they came over the World Cup, he was spotted for Pontypool, wanted to sign him, which is a team in Wales. Obviously, my granddad always wanted us to come over this way anyway. So he signed with Pontypool, and then we ended up coming to live in Caerleon, first and foremost, when we moved over.
What age would you have been then?
I would have been about 8. So okay. I'd be about 99, 2000 was the year we came over.
Culture shock, at what kind of level going from Tonga to the outskirts of Ponty? Oh,
I never knew I could be as cold as I was when we first came over. It was always like real grey and damp. We lived on like a building estate there. It was the first house built, and the rest were just like, they weren't ready for anyone to live. So we ended up being quite isolated. We were quite young at the time, so we were just loving being in a different place. But I remember my parents were quite homesick at the time.
Were those the days with Toby Faletau? Was he there as well? Or was that later on?
No, that was when I first met Toby, when we first came to Wales, yeah. Because they lived the town over, which was 20 minutes away from us. And a lot of the Sundays, we kind of get together as a family and just have food together. And because we were the same age, we just play a lot together. And that's where we kind of started playing rugby against each other.
Is he actually a cousin? Or have I made that up? Is that just a sort of... Tongan brothers,
because obviously like a lot of Tongans when they come over here, there's not that many of us, but they know each other from somehow in the village. It's a lot easier for me to say, oh, he's my cousin, than me trying to explain that, oh, he's just Tongan, but we're close and we grew up together and all that.
Billy told me a story,
but he's not
about
an actual cousin.
Billy told me a story about, is it like you guys had like a little bit of a gang, but Toby was, because is Toby slightly older? Then it was like a bit of a, like he was a bit, it was a bit loose one day. Like some, Billy said he somehow got himself into boys in a fight, and you two were like, how the hell did we get into this? Under some bridge, is that right?
So it wasn't like we were in a gang. So Toby was, he had an older brother who was a little bit older than us. We're all quite similar age. And he's like just come over from Tonga. And he didn't really understand like the context of some stuff, and he's quite big, so a lot of there is a bridge gang, and he was walking past the bridge gang, and this is where they used to live in Wales, and they just thought, oh, look at the size of him, he's a monster. But he took it as an insult instead of them saying like he's massive, because he didn't really understand. All he understood was monster. So then my brother was with him at the time, and Toby, and he started kicking off with them, and they were quite young, so they were just like, what the hell's going on here? And yeah, they had a fight with those lads, and they could make sense, to be fair, those lads.
Because they said that Billy was like, just suddenly there was a massive fight going on, and he had to like start piling in, otherwise he was going to get filled in, and he couldn't understand what he was doing. But you weren't there?
No, I wasn't at that one, but there was another one when we were in England. Again, it was, he didn't have a clue what was going on, he was just jumping in, so...
Imagine accidentally starting a new lot as well, but like thinking it's a good idea. Like from a distance, you look smaller than you are, going, oh yeah, fuck these two. Oh my God. That'd be terrible.
Let's go out.
Oh, it wasn't like we were great at fighting, but we just, because we're quite big, we could just end up rugby tackling them, and then it was easier.
Years of wrestling in your sitting room.
Exactly,
at home.
Yeah.
Very paid dividends. Did your parents enjoy Wales? How long did they spend there?
They eventually grew to love the place. We were there for 6 years, and we made some friends that they're still friends with now. So people at the club, Pontypool and stuff, that my parents, my dad were close with. So they still have friends that they go and see every now and then. So they enjoyed it then. But as I said, because it was such a culture change for us, it was different in every way. It was hard for them initially to settle, but they did in turn love it, to be fair.
Yeah. Would you look back now? Because I know faith is very important. Obviously, we've spoken with Billy about that I'll just get into the semantics of it, but would you put it down as an upbringing of faith and rugby and family? Is that kind of, are they the core pillars?
Yeah, we always taught when we were younger that it was always church first, then school, then rugby. So rugby was always last. And that's kind of how my parents found it a bit easier, was through church and making friends in the local churches, and that way then they end up settling in a bit quicker. So it was massive for us, and it is massive for Tongans in terms of the religion and that side of it, really.
I was going to say exactly that. Is faith still very important to you now? Is that something that you find great strength from?
Yeah, definitely. For me, my mum would always say I probably don't go to church as much as I should do, but I understand that what I have and is all because God has blessed me with the talent to play rugby, but also the opportunity to be count myself very fortunate to have a few breaks coming through and being able to kind of get into England, and not only England but Saracens as well. I was very lucky, yeah.
So how did you find yourself going from living in Wales to Millfield? How did that journey take place?
So when we moved from Wales, we went to Bristol, which was where my mum had just become a minister in Methodist Church, and she was first placed in Thornbury, Bristol. My brother was actually the one that he played in a few sevens and tens tournaments, and one of those tournaments was in Millfield. He obviously did really well, and the head coach, John Mallett, wanted to bring him in, and then he worked out that he had me and my brothers and wanted us to both go into Millfield. But my parents were quite apprehensive in sending us away to boarding school quite young, especially him, because he was still 14 at the time. They ended up just me going to Millfield, and then he went to Bristol, finish off his school there.
Interesting. So you would have gone, would you go to Millfield what, for lower sixth? GCSEs? What year would you have gone to into that?
Just
into
for sixth form, yeah. So I went in lower sixth.
How big, obviously you used the word challenge, but how big a step up, how big a culture shock? It seems like your life is just eternal culture shocks at this point. You've done a pretty remarkable journey from Tonga to New Zealand back, and then into Wales, and then suddenly into, you know, one of England's greatest public schools. There's a hell of a lot coming quite thick and fast.
Yeah, definitely, and that's where I was standing pretty lucky in terms of being blessed by God, really. Lucky that my brother did well in those seven tournaments that gave us a chance. And now when I went to Millfield, it was a lot different to anything I've ever seen. I obviously knew that it was a prestige school, and there's obviously going to be students there with a bit of money, but I didn't realise how much money it would be, and that was a shock. And trying to kind of get used to that and also concentrate on school and rugby was difficult, but I've made friends there, lifelong friends, and I'm still friends with them now, and I loved the 2 years I spent in Millfield. Would highly recommend to anyone that has the chance to go there.
It's really interesting. I mean, can you remember day one? I mean, imagine being big at rugby particularly, or good at rugby, and certainly being big enough to take on, well, it's such a proud rugby school, Millfield. But do you remember day one, not quite cap and satchel, but not far off that, walking into hundreds of years of history, and how that kind of sat with you?
Oh, I still remember it now, because JJ, Jonathan Joseph, was the same year as me. Yeah. So we joined together, and I remember the first day was kind of like a inset day where we kind of get to know everyone. I remember walking around with no friends, wearing like a massive rugby bag and like an Adidas hoodie at the time as well. And just walking around.
Free stash, even then.
Yeah. Not even knowing what's going on and just trying to like find my way around. Because I missed the preseason with the rugby team, so I didn't actually spend time with them. But I didn't really know anyone, so it was hard for me to kind of get settled in.
Were you allowed to play? Because obviously Billy at Harrow for a period of time wasn't allowed to play because he like killed some little kid, and they were like, you know, he scored 5 tries in the first 2 minutes. Did you have the same thing with Millfield, or were they happy to let you play?
Oh, it was the opposite of anything. I couldn't actually get in the team. So from the first 6 months of first year, I was in the second team mostly. And it was hard work getting into that first team, especially when we had quite a few players who, in my position, I played for England age groups and also been in academy. So, there was no issues with me playing.
You've had some good old coaches along the way as well, but I grew up at the Rep watching John Mallett do his thing. What was he like as a, you know, the old rugby boars amongst us will remember him, certainly in England shirts as well, but what was he like as a young pup coming through?
Oh, it was, for me, it was massive. I think he didn't really, it wasn't all technical with him. There was obviously, he can coach me in no way, but I thought the way his toughness around the field and stuff was where I could learn from. He was a lot smaller than what he was when he was playing. But when we used to do like morning gym and stuff, he'd be in there grafting with us. And just to see him at his age, still like beating most of us, it was amazing. And it was always something that I kind of tried to learn from him, was his ability to kind of go through the pain of training. And he was massive in my learning of that. It was still a long way from being good enough, but he was good for me in that way.
What was JJ like as a student?
Oh, he was the worst, actually, for me anyway. He loved making me feel really awkward, which I soon realised after the first 2 weeks being around him. But now, as a student, he was a little bit like of a ladies' man. He kind of always around girls, and it's no different now, to be honest, but he was very comfortable being around other girls. And for me, that was something I wasn't used to. But in terms of a rugby player, it wasn't until the second year where he started tearing up for us, really. It was just class to have someone like him coming through together when we kind of went into England.
That was the one thing when I was at Wellington, we just thought about Millfield. Well, two things, really. Great facilities, great looking ladies. That was basically what Millfield was known for.
Oh, yeah, you're not wrong there, to be fair.
I'm throwing this out there. Was Ella Eyre in your year at school? Or have I made
that? She was a couple of years below me and JJ. So when we were in upper six, she was in year nine, I think. Year nine or year ten.
A classic Mako, knowing exactly where she was and what age group she was. Classic.
It wasn't me. It wasn't.
She studied English, history of art and French, if I'm not mistaken.
She used to go to bed at 6:30. She'd wake up at 7.
I only know because obviously I've seen her since, and JJ was really close to her and kind of like...
You only know because of the high power binoculars.
The old night vision goggles, what?
Hey, JJ was a lot closer with LA than I was. And as I said, everyone knew she was a massive talent and they spent a lot of time talking to each other, I think.
So from Millfield, did you go straight to Sarries? Or did you do some time at Bristol? Have I made that up?
Yeah, so I was signed on in the academy at Bristol.
Right.
When I was still at Millfield. So after Millfield, I went straight into Bristol after that, when they were in the championship.
So who had you been mucking about with at that point? What year was that? And who were the old guard that were?
That was 2009. I don't know if you remember Darren Crompton.
Yeah, I was going to say. I wonder. He played for 110 years.
Yeah. He was awesome for me coming into Bristol. He's obviously old school and just being in and around. He's a great character as well. So he's funny as hell, just listening to his stories. He was one of them. And then Mark Irish, who's a coach now at Worcester, I lived with him. So he looked after me as well. So those two together were funny to be around.
And were you knocked about because you were a young kid coming through, or were you nurtured at Bristol? Because it can go either way.
It was actually pretty nurtured, to be honest. Obviously, being an academy kid, you still had to do like coffees, and youngers had to bring in the sweets, and you'd look after the like little things they'd ask for, like picking up their tape and stuff like that. But it wasn't that bad. It was like things you'd get on with. But they looked after me really well, to be honest. I think it's because I was pretty laid back, nothing would really, obviously I wasn't coming in and shouting and roaring and stuff, but I wouldn't be like backing down if they like challenged me or anything.
I love it. Is there a sense, because at Sarries it's all very, you're so good at what you do, and yet it's a culture that's built on frothy coffee and, you know, everyone's saying good morning to each other. Does it ever kick off at Sarries or not?
Oh, every day pretty much.
There
wouldn't be a day where it doesn't kick off, yeah.
That is interesting. I just wondered how much getting knocked about makes you, and how much you have to keep coming back, particularly when you're a young kid, to prove that you belong, kind of thing, or whether that's just old school and CP at the edges.
No, there's obviously things that you still take from those days, and especially me coming through the academy now is a lot different to some of the academy boys coming through now. And you try and be, I remember being in the academy and when some first teamers didn't talk to me, I took it quite hard. And I was always like, oh, why wouldn't he talk to me? But now I'm on the other end of the shoe. I'm always like, I don't have anything to talk to the academy boys about. So that's why I don't talk to them. But
I love the fact you haven't sort of necessarily, you know, taken what you went through and transformed into this kind of nurturing uncle. It's pretty much give it as I took it kind of thing.
It's the only way they learn. I think nowadays some of the academy boys, they're coming in expecting everything to be handed to them a little bit. And it's the same everywhere, really. And they're used to being the best players of their age. And it's tough where they have to learn. And most of them do learn. And the good ones definitely just get on with it. So it's a bit different now to when we were younger.
So what was the step from Bristol to Sarries?
I think a lot of it was when we were in the 20s and 18s, I played with a lot of the Sarries players. And that obviously meant they kind of knew of me from talking to them. But also they'd come and watch a lot of the 20s games. And when they used to come and watch, they wouldn't just be the academy manager on his own. There'd be about three or four of them. And part of that is because obviously Faz was in my 20s and the first team coach would want to see what he's doing. So they'd come along and that's kind of how it went from there, really. I finished my academy contract at Bristol and after the 20s World Cup, my agent was just like, oh, there's some interest from Sarries. Would you be keen to go? And at that time, I knew I wanted to play Premiership, and it was only them and Bath were the only two options, and I wanted to get away from the West Country, so I said yes to Sarries.
I reckon you probably picked the right one, given what the trophy cabinet holds at the moment. I'm absolutely fascinated, because I sort of knew bits of your backstory, but I've never sort of plotted it out in quite this way. It's just the most extraordinary series of hurdles that you've kind of quite happily ambled over by the look of it. Has Sarries always felt like a natural fit for you? We were talking about, you know, what it's like going into somewhere like Millfield without necessarily, you know, knowing the ropes. Was Sarries hand in glove easy fit, or was that another culture shock to overcome?
Oh yeah, it was a shock. It was the step up was, yeah, it was a big step. I remember my first pre-season just thinking, am I even good enough to be here? And that first year in general was a bit of teething, to be honest. Getting to know like the way they do things and what's expected of you as a player. It took a long time and it wasn't easy. It took a bit of a push from one of the S&C staff who was massive for me, and players in and around just saying like, this, you need to get better, otherwise you're gone. And I was pretty lucky to go to Sarries in terms of that's where I learned how to work hard, really.
That is interesting, because actually you're on with someone in Hask who you always found that work hard element quite easy, didn't you?
Yeah, I did, but the more I analyse it, you know, we talked to David Pocock about it, and his obsessiveness came out of kind of potentially or did from kind of trauma from Zimbabwe. Mine, I think, was probably down to a lack of confidence in my rugby ability, and maybe just out a bit of fear of not of not making it, or not making the most of my talents, or just, you know, trying to be competitive, really. And I did, but it was always a bit of a grind, really. But then I was not as naturally talented as Mako and Billy. You know, I look at what they can do, and it's interesting. You know, we said earlier about what John Mallett said about them at school, because when you're big kids, you more often than not, how many times do you see an under 10s game or under 12s game or under 15s game where there's one massive kid that just runs over the top of everybody and no kids can know how to tackle? But as soon as everyone gets bigger, that kid always runs up two upright, you know, doesn't have the passing skills because he found it so easy. And I think it's interesting how talented these guys were. But when you say Sarries made you learn about working hard, was that because those coaches like abused you and were like, Mako, this is not good enough? Or is it because you saw other people putting the work in and not complaining?
Yeah, it was a bit of both. I think it was mostly looking at the other players around my age and just seeing them do it. And then the coaches obviously showing me how to do it as well. But it was tough, because when I say like learn how to work hard, it was almost like I'd get tired and just stop. Whereas they'd be like instilling that, when you get tired, there's always somewhere else. You can always push on from there. And it was hard for me at first to kind of understand that and realise that you can go a bit harder than you think you can.
Do you think your journey was made harder because so much of it was done on your own? Because that's what I'm hearing for, you know, hearing through this, is that, yes, you got a tight family, yes, you had Billy, but for a long time you were separated. Even now we're at Sarries,
it must be quite daunting as a young guy, because I feel it. You know, I'm full of chat. I'm fucking full of life. Now at 35, I'll walk into a situation and I won't let shit get awkward. I won't feel like out of place. I'll go and talk to people. But when you're young, I remember always being very self-confident or self-conscious. Is that something you recognise?
Yeah, it was a little bit, because obviously when I was in Bristol, my family moved away, and it was only me in Bristol, and they were in High Wycombe, and in school as well, boarding school. But I say I'm quite good at, I'm better at driving myself than I am with someone's there, like next to me going, you need, like, keep going. So if we did training, it would help, obviously, but I cannot easily just try and have that inner drive to do it myself. And I didn't really think about it like you did, just said it, then ask about being on my own for a lot of it. But I just realised that, yeah, it was a bit. But I was lucky that I knew a lot of the Saracens players. So when I came here, I already had like a relationship with them. So it wasn't exactly, I was on my own in terms of my family, but they kind of looked after me as well.
How did you balance out that kind of being Tongan and being proud and having that kind of heritage and your dad playing for Tonga and all your kind of family, and also being so kind of westernised? Like, did you manage to kind of keep some Tongan traditions, or did you just want to try and fit in and you were like, listen, I'm from Tonga, but it doesn't matter, I'm doing this? Like, was there any sort of conflict like that?
It wasn't, to be fair. A lot of it I was really comfortable with. The only thing would be when I was younger, it wasn't something that we would do in Tonga. So the first couple of times would be, I'd have to ask my parents if I was allowed, and they understood that there's a reason for it. They kind of, the more and more I did it, the more they understood that that's the way rugby is here. But in terms of conflicts and doing stuff at Saracens or with England or any Bristol before that, there wasn't many where I'd be like uncomfortable to do it. In terms of, I always knew that I was Tongan and I tried to stay true to that. It wasn't like I became English the second I left Tonga.
So you haven't had to like re-find your Tongan identity, you know, and be more you know what I mean? Because you sort of like came over here, fitted in, and now you've established, you're like, everybody knows me, everyone likes me, I can be more Tongan, if you know what I mean.
To be fair, like me being Tongan around the lads is easy. They kind of understand, they understand it, being in and around them for a couple of years now. It's actually the other way where doing things that are more Western and or not like not traditional with Tonga, that is harder for me with my parents. Obviously, I'm not married at the moment and I've got two kids, and to them it was hard to take. One kid was, they could probably look past that, but with two kids it was a lot harder.
Yeah.
So those are like the type of things that they'd want me to be a bit more Tongan in that situation.
Do you think you're so quiet because you were naturally quiet, or when you got like thrown into these situations, like going to a new school with a whole lot of people that you didn't relate to, or going to a new club you didn't relate to, was kind of being quite quiet your like defense mechanism
for me? I'm not naturally an outgoing person, and unless I know you well enough, I wouldn't say I'd come over and just be like, oh, you're right, how's things? So naturally for me, I'd kind of be quite shy and standoffish, and in turn then people think that I'm kind of not arrogant, but they think, oh, he's a bit big-headed to not come in and make the effort. But those situations obviously didn't help. It's always hard for me still now to go into a new environment and try to mix in. Because after a while, you kind of get to know people and you kind of feel comfortable enough to open up a bit.
Well, did things change dramatically when finally Billy joined you at Saris?
No, by the time he joined, I was all right. Fine. I want to say it was my third year at Saris is when he joined. And by then, I played enough in my second year that I knew I was in the team a bit. So I was in and around the rotation. When he joined, actually, he took a bit of time, because obviously people knew him from him playing against us, and him coming to Saris was a big deal in terms of initially he didn't want to come, and then my parents wanted to come. So when he first joined, he didn't know where he stood, and he went a bit quiet, to be fair. And he also didn't know as many Saris lads as I did. He knew them and playing against them, but not going through the age group.
What was it like playing against him? Because obviously we've heard about you two wrestling as kids. What was it like, you know, Wasp versus Saris, Makavunipola, Bini Vilipola? You know, did you like think, oh, I better be nice? Or were you like, fuck this guy, I'm going to fill him in?
No, it was horrible. You were playing in that game. Remember the one in Adams Park?
Yeah.
We just come back from a skiing trip. And we were playing against each other first and last, I hope. And the only time he ran into me or I ran into him, we kind of just hit each other and went straight down. It wasn't very nice. Like, most people, when they run at you as hard as they can, you want to hit them back as hard as you can. And I knew that he would do the same to me. So it was almost like a bit of respect, and we just went down.
Did you talk in the week before that, or were you like full radio silence?
No, we spoke, because he was still living near home. So when I'd go home and see the parents, and we'd talk about it, and we'd obviously joke about it, a little thing, but it wasn't very nice for them watching the game. They just wanted us to both do our bit for our teams and then hopefully come off injury-free. So,
is that why your mum was so keen to get Billy to Sarries? Because she apparently was kind of the real ringleader in that whole process.
Yeah. That was probably the main reason, or one of the main reasons, was we knew that we'd have to play against each other. We're in different teams. And after that game, she wasn't very happy about it. We went home and she didn't even know what the score was and who won, what happened. She just spoke to us about how she didn't never want to go through that again. But another point as well was, obviously, at the time, Sarries were doing all right and Wasps were not doing as well. So we were like, look, the opportunity's there, and it's better for one, for the family, but it could be better for you career-wise as well.
How is life at Sarries at the moment? Is it mad? Is it silent? Is it frustrating?
It's more silent and probably frustrating than anything. So right now, we don't know exactly when our games are going to be. With everything that's happening with the Premiership, it obviously trickles down to us. So that's frustrating, trying to figure out when we can have games. But also, it's like so many players have left or have gone on loan, that the group itself is completely different to what it was last year. 8 big names, really, I think, off the top of my head, that have left, and they're all big personalities as well. So it's tough to kind of replace them. And at the minute, you're kind of going in, you're just, the England lads especially are kind of like, oh, this is different. Like, not what we used to. There's not many people there you kind of have or talk to and have conversations with, really. They're all mostly academy lads.
So you're not talking to anyone?
No, I don't. It's not that I hate to talk to them. It's just I find it hard to speak to them. But no, I talk to them and say good morning and say hello, how they are. I'm learning more and more about them. So it's good, because in that way, then hopefully when the boys come back from loan, that we at the group now, we have kind of already built those relationships.
Is there a lot of five-a-side football and a little bit of sort of indoor cricket, or are you still hitting tackle bags as hard as you were?
So hopefully this week should be our first game. So they brought the bags out, but it has been a lot more. They've been doing a lot more wrestling and different games and stuff that doesn't get tedious for the boys, really, when they get bored. Right now, they're just ready for a game, to be honest. And with all the restrictions of COVID, there's less and less like face-to-face time on the field.
If you are going to miss a season, this is probably the season to do it. I mean, as we start recording, they've just suspended the European champion, Heineken Champions Cup. They've got all sorts of challenges around it. Are you bang up for trips to Jersey and the Cornish Pirates and Doncaster, etc.? I mean, will you be playing as much as you can? Or have they said, you're a Ferrari, we need to put you in the garage and we'll bring you out again when we need you?
No, I think it depends on what they want, really. So it depends on... Because at the minute, they've said to me that in terms of games, I won't be playing until after March, really, when they start. So, but as I said, like if they need me to play, then obviously I'll play. But right now, I've not really been told a clear schedule of games that I'm definitely playing. But in terms of going away to Jersey and Doncaster, Cornish Pirates, they're like amazing bus trips. So I'd love to be involved in them, yeah.
Are you back of the bus, sir? Where do you sit?
I'm like nearer the back, so I'm middle back, yeah. I wouldn't say I'm back of the bus, but so the more beers I obviously have, the further I go back. So by the end of the bus trip, most boys just try and get away from me, because they know how much of a nose I am when I get drunk.
I was going to say, I imagine if you say I'm coming to the back of the bus, the tide parts and the throne awaits kind of thing. I can't imagine there are too many that would tell you to sit back down, other than your brother, probably.
Yeah, probably, yeah. But now there's a lot of other boys, obviously, But I wouldn't be like, oh yeah, I'm going straight to the back. A lot of the younger boys would know their place and go straight to the front anyway. But there's no kind of seniority or anything like that. It's just, you sit where you sit.
You're not a massive drinker, are you, Macco? But when you do drink, you do go a bit rogue. Like, I don't know what this person is you turn into, but it's definitely not Macco and a bonus.
No, I've tried to cut down a bit on how much I do drink, but I do enjoy having a few beers. And when I do get drunk, there's a different person that come out, and I just get.
You have an alter ego.
Almost like I'm not really talkative when I'm sober, but the second I get a beer in me, I can't shut up. So, yeah, I'd probably say I do have a bit of an alter ego.
Yeah, but when you say you can't shut up, like we're talking about like being really quiet, like humble, to elbowing you in the ribs, hats, what you're doing. You're like, Macco, and then you're like, Macco, can you stop doing that? And you're like, fuck off. You're like, Macco, how you never do this. Do you remember in that, I'm not going to dob you in, but he's not involved anymore. Do you remember when 2015, when we weren't allowed out, and you got into your head that you were gonna leave the hotel, and we were all like,
yeah.
Macco, you can't go. And you were like, fuck it, I'm going out to London. We're like, Stuart Lancaster's not going to like that. Do you remember?
Yeah. So, I remember because we were like, it was near the end of like a tournament. We're like, we just went back to the hotel.
Just beat New Zealand.
Oh, that was it. We just beat New Zealand. We're like, what the hell? Like, this is the best, like, biggest win we've had in a while. Why are we going back to the hotel? And then we go back to the hotel, everyone's having a few drinks, and everyone's going back to bed. But I remember Jeff Parling just pulling me to one, because it was when we still had the initiation of, you have to have a drink with every member of the squad. And obviously I'd had a few too many, and I wouldn't listen to anyone. So Jeff's like, come on, mate, I'll take you somewhere, we'll go. He ends up taking me to my room, puts me into a room, shuts the door. I can't open the door for some reason. And he comes in like 10, 15 minutes later, and I'm like passed out on my knees next to the bed, my head just on the bed, and I'm just on my knees next to the bed on the floor. And he's just like, what is going on here? But luckily I didn't go out, and I'm still playing for England.
That's back to your favourite pastime of having a nap.
There was one player who did that at Penny Hill, who exactly the same thing, wanted to go out, got steaming, had a drink with everyone, and then passed out on the floor. And the underfloor heating just melted one side of his face.
Oh, yeah.
He woke up looking like Two-Face from Batman. And the next day, we're like, are you all right? And he just basically had every bit of moisture had dehydrated out of his body into the underfloor heating. He'd melted one side of his face. And we were like, are you all right, mate? It's like, yeah. Honestly, it was terrible. So you escaped.
It was horrendous.
That needs to be revealed. Yeah. Who was that?
I can't tell you. Because again, it's another
What does
character.
It rhyme with?
You know who it is, Macca, don't you?
No, I don't know.
Right. I'll save it. I'm writing another book.
Books. So it's just weird times at Sarri's, is it? I mean, is it a happy camp? Because you're very good at making sure that everyone kind of is where they need to be. I just wonder, you know, for everything you've done and all the success you've had, are you treating this as an experience that'll make us stronger, or is everyone just kind of kicking their heels until you can get back into it again?
No, it's definitely it's an experience, especially it's now an opportunity really to see what we have when we don't have the first 15 or the stronger squad. So it's almost like a learning year for those younger guys, and to see what we can where we can go from here really, and that's the way they kind of approached it. Like, what's happened now, and it is what it is, we can't change it, so now we just gotta enjoy the year that we have. And we already talked about it before when they announced what's going to happen. We spoke about the opportunity we have to kind of not restart, but come into hopefully this season now with a fresh, clean slate.
Was there an option to leave, Macco, or did you want to stay and have a go?
I never really explored trying to go, really. Part of it was also because I saw this year as an opportunity to kind of not rest, but try and get my body right, because at the minute it's not handling as much as I wanted to, and it was an opportunity to kind of rest as much as I could. And it just so happened that COVID hit, and now it's kind of backed up what I thought. But I never really explored the avenue of leaving or going on loan. I'd struggle to play for another team in England, to be honest.
When you mentioned the body, that's quite interesting. What are you, 29?
29, yeah.
Or so he says. So he says.
That trick's been used once or twice before. But I mean, how are you physically? And you know, are you benefiting from the rest that you've kind of signed up for?
Yeah, definitely. I think without being disrespectful to the boys that have gone back into club, seeing them go back into Premiership and Heineken Cup, is you want to be playing those games. And don't get me wrong, I want to be involved in Heineken Cup and Champions Cup and all that. Seeing them playing week in, week out, and then off the back of that, knowing that they'd have to back it up to Six Nations, you can understand like the slog that they're going to have to go through. And it's also been quite nice to be around my family and actually have Christmas off for the first time ever. So it was nice in that way, and being able to kind of work on my body a little bit, because there's always been things that I wanted to try and get better at and do better at in terms of the gym and physically when I come out to the field, but I've never really had the time to kind of allow my body to rest as well. So,
get a six pack. You getting a six pack?
Nah. The only way I get a six pack is if I paid for it. So there's no way I'm ever going to get one.
What is your training changed a lot? Because when we originally spoke, I know that they were always on to you about conditioning, and you spent a lot of your life on a watt bike, just like getting those extra top-ups in. Is that changed now, or are you still getting hammered for that kind of stuff?
No, I'm still getting hammered. Doesn't matter how old I am or how long I play for. No, they're still on top of me for that. But I think I'm getting, not used to it, but I'm getting better at understanding what I need for myself to be ready to play a game. So it's almost more like a conversation now than them coming and saying, you need to do this, you need to do that. It's almost like, oh, you wanted to be here. What do you find helps you get there? And I'll say what I feel, and then
what? Sleep, you know, sleep, and extra food. Because yeah, that isn't going to work.
Rest. Exactly. Rest. Yeah, but it's been, as you probably know, Haskins, that the older you get, the more you kind of know more about your body.
When do you think you'll be back, Achilles wise? Just out of interest, have you got a date?
There's no set date, so I was hoping to hopefully be running within the next week or two, and then it's from there then. But it's kind
of... So another month. Have you got an eye on the Six Nations?
Yeah, I'd like to be ready for the Six Nations. Hopefully be available for that. But with the Achilles, it's just kind of like day by day, really. Sometimes I feel good, and then the other days I'll be a little bit more achiness, and I'd have to pull back a bit on what I can do.
How worried, or not worried necessarily, but how is it a concern going straight into the Six Nations without necessarily having played a lot of rugby? Are you getting lots of texts on a daily basis from Eddie Jones saying, how are you, mate?
I'm not getting loads. It's just every now and then you'd be just asking like how I am and how the family are. But you obviously, there's no preparation outside of a game to get your match fit. And that's probably one thing that you're nervous about, or I'm nervous about. But you also, as I said, like you kind of know, you understand what you need to get right for you to be able to perform. And I've certainly learned a little bit more about that over the last couple of years. So hopefully if I do have the opportunity to play in Six Nations, I know I'll be ready to do my bit for the team.
What does Eddie say that you need? Every now and then something strikes him and he'll be on the phone to you and he'll be like, Mako, I need you to be more explosive, mate. Or you need the ball in your hand, mate. Or you need to, you know, run more. What's his things for you?
It changes every now and then. It changes, like, most of it is to do around footwork and a ball carry. So that's been kind of the more recent one. Being able to handle the ball a bit better than I have, and be more of a facilitator when I can. So that's probably the main ones I can remember that he's wanted me to work on. And to me, like, hearing that has kind of got me excited, because then those are things that I want to get better at anyway. So it's made it more enjoyable for me going out on the field and going after something that I really enjoy.
He's never messaged you saying, like, sleep less.
there's nothing like that. There's always, like, stuff around that, but also about conditioning and, like, you need to get your skinnies down and stuff. So, but there's stuff that you get used to as a front rower.
Does he bother firing you the 4 a.m. texts, or does he know that those are bullets that aren't necessarily going to hit their target? You know how he's always challenging people at random hours of the day.
Yeah, he does. He does every now and then send me a text at like 12:30 or 1:00, and I'm like, And I am awake anyway sometimes with the kids. I'll try and answer them. But yeah, there are times where you text me like 4:30 and I'm like, I'll wake up to them. I'm like, oh, there's no way I was ever going to be awake for that. Sorry, mate.
I love that. As Warren Gatland sent out an email to 60, 70, 80 people with a little BCC, how you're tracking. Do you hear from Warren at all? Have you done a couple of tours with him?
No, nothing. Don't really get any texts or anything from him, nor do I expect one or anything really. So the only times I've really spoken to him...
Would you hope for one in 6 months' time? Probably sooner.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. I'd love to be involved with the Lions again. We've thoroughly enjoyed being on the last two I've been on, and working with him has been... I've also really enjoyed that.
Very good. Very, very well media-trained handbook answer, that one.
We also, no, but it's actually quite nice, though, that he said that he actually wanted the text message, because normally they don't even pretend they want the text message. Normally they say, oh, well, we'll take it easy and we'll see what happens if I play well. He's like, yeah, no, fuck yeah, I want a text. Yeah. Warren, I'm ready. Not me, I'm definitely not ready.
You've obviously done two, 2013 and 2017. How do you compare your Lions experiences? I mean, 13 was extraordinary and euphoric. 2017 was dramatic, but sort of, it wasn't quite that climax in the end, was it? But how do you look back on what you've done with the Lions?
Oh, I've loved it. I think I've been on a few tours with England as well, and they're definitely up there, the best tours I've ever been on. The first one especially was, I was quite young at the time and didn't really think that I was going to be playing much. So I just wanted to go out there and enjoy it. And that's why I loved touring Australia. It was unbelievable. Everywhere we went was a great place to go out, to be honest. So I enjoyed it like that. But the rugby as well was good, because I guess this is a little bit different to club rugby and international, because you've got the best of the best. It actually feels like you have a lot more freedom as a player when you're on those tours. It doesn't feel like a slog and constantly out there, just the days kind of blend into one. It feels like every day is a different one, and that's why I've kind of enjoyed those tours a lot. But the New Zealand one, for me, I loved it. Just the fact that they thought they were going to win so easily and we ended up drawing it, I actually enjoyed it more than a win. No, I obviously would have wanted us to win it, but just seeing them being so disappointed when we drew the series was, for me, a win.
That sort of sounds like rugby's answer of a cock block, but I will give it to you, Macko. I sort of like where you're going with it. I like what you've done there. Are you someone who likes memorabilia? Do you capture shirts and do you like mementos from your days, or just once it's done, it's in the memory bank and that's it?
I obviously have shirts and stuff from the games and the tours, but I wouldn't say I go collecting them or getting shirts signed and stuff. I probably should. When I look back, I probably should have done more of that, but no, I wouldn't say I'm one for collecting any memorabilia.
What's been fascinating, spending far too much time with Hask over the last few years, is just the love affair of people like Sir Best that he came back with from New Zealand, and the list is endless. Are you someone that has made great, great friendships? I mean, I'm interested in your friendship with Tig, who we had on the other day, and I don't think we treated as well as I desperately wanted to. But, you know, have you made lifelong friends from your Lions?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Who's in your mind?
So Tiger would be one from New Zealand, where I enjoyed being around him a lot. But the tour before that, Adam Jones kind of looked after me quite a bit. So he's one person, whenever I see him or we play him, I always want to go and catch up and chat to. But most front rows kind of stick to each other, like, together. And so any of the front rows from both tours, I'd just be, every now and then I'll give them a text, or if they put someone on social media, I'll just reply to them and see how they are, really.
When you say Adam Jones looked after you, in inverted commas, is that on the field or off the field?
Both. On the field in terms of getting the speed with the way things are done with the Lions, and off the field where he kind of just showed me how to be a good tourist.
Say no more. I love it. Well, I mean, because obviously you were your test team material. I'm always interested to find out from people who, you know, toured with Hoff what he was like. I mean, he was happily bin juice/dirt tracker. But I mean, how important are characters like Hask, Matt Stevens in 2013, who took the banjo, etc., to the success of a Lions tour?
They're everything, really. I think people underestimate what they can do for the environment and the group, really, because you only need two or three people to kind of sap and take away from it. And there was none of that when we were away on tour. And Haas was massive when trying to keep the humour of the group up and make everyone laugh. So it was good for us. And him and Shawnee as a pair is actually like, I can't believe how well they got on. The fact that they only just met on that tour, and you'd think they'd been lifelong friends forever.
Fair cop.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. Look, I'm one of those people where I think if because rugby attracts good people. I said it before, and you don't reach the top of the game if you're an arsehole. Like a few people get through. Like you'll tolerate as a team, you'll tolerate a couple of mavericks who are unbelievable but a bit socially awkward. But most people are good lads. Like Mako's quiet, but getting fired up, he'll get in there, he'll tell a story, he'll play his part. Mako, whenever he's in England, he's always the one in charge of what the guys do when they leave a huddle. So everyone goes, Mako, what are you doing? It'd be like two claps, a click and a cheer, and you'll see the guys do it. And so he that's his role, you know. So my role is to try to bring a little bit of humour, but you always get on very well with those environments. And I think it's interesting because it's harder to distance yourself than it is to be involved. And that's the bizarre thing. It's actually like, it's really hard to be isolated. And everybody I went on that tour with got involved and played their role. Didn't, Macca, weren't you like joke of the day or like information or something for places at one point?
I was joke of the day, yeah. And it didn't go down very well. So
I was actually
announcer. Me and Conor Murray were doing announcements. So anything like on the bus, like we're having dinner here or this time, something's happening tonight, we'd be the ones going up. But he texted me saying, oh, I don't really feel comfortable doing this. Can you do it? I was like, all right, yeah, sweet.
Did you just hear this? All right, guys, Mackle here. Right, we need everyone doing this. You'd be like, what the hell? Didn't you try and do Joke of the Day once? I won't get you to say it because this show will never get put on air if it was, but wasn't it like so aggressive that everyone was like that? It wasn't even laughed at. Everyone was just like this. Just staring at me.
No, you're mistaking me for Sinks, mate. Sinks was the one who was aggressive. Yeah, he was coming up and I was like, wow. And there were women on the bus as well. I was like, oh,
yeah. We once read out Sinks' text messages that he was sending people on his phone. Like, Sean O'Brien did it. And honestly, by the end of it, we were like, Sinks, I think. I wanted to have a chat with him and just like take it to one side and be like, bro, I don't think you can talk to people like that. I don't think you can say that's these things. Like, let's not play on half these words I didn't even know. I didn't even know, mate.
Not that surprising, perhaps. He's had his wrist slapped this week for getting a bit overexcited on the field.
Well, what did he do?
Oh, he got overexcited about a no-arms tackle that he was the recipient of and questioned the referee with one or two many profanities, I think. Personal vested question, this one, Mako. You've got to answer honestly. Lions tour, would you play it this year in the UK, but hopefully in front of fans, or roll it over to South Africa 22 because it's a tour?
I'd roll it over. Obviously, they'll do whatever works for them, but you can't have a Lions tour in the UK. It doesn't feel the same to me. Being in their environment and them kind of welcoming you into their den almost. And you want to go to Africa because it's nice and warm. There's some beaches. There's beaches there.
And there's sunbeds for a snooze. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, yeah. So, but it almost kind of, whatever happens, it'll still be a Lions tour and you still want to be involved, but it takes away the kind of the glamour of going away and representing the Lions, I feel.
Hold a minute, Akko, is it just because you want to get away from the kids and definitely want to get so far away that your missus can't come back? Because you listed wet weather. I imagine you're going to say there's good steak and there's a distance from the kids. Is that true?
It does help. It does help. And the best thing about it is the time difference. It's only like an hour or two. Not even. So it's probably the same time difference. So you can call them and then be away with it and do your own thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's not Alex, I know what you were looking for.
There's always
like
a vested interest behind these pure answers. I saw someone who'd started some bloke has started a petition online to say the Lions Tour has to be in South Africa. 2022. And I then peel back, and the guy runs a tour company taking rugby fans to South Africa. You're like, yeah, are you doing this because of the purity of the Lions or because you need a big payday? It's like, you know, never lift the cover on pure campaigns.
You objectively wanted to do it. You wanted to do it, but you. So basically, Alex, the reason we're asking is...
No, I didn't. I merely suggested that if you play it next year, it's also a logistical nightmare. I just said, hey, why don't you play it in the UK? And then I found myself defending that because you're under attack. I'd much rather go to South Africa on a Lions tour. No bones about it. But the thing that matters the most to me is that the Lions not only survives, but thrives. And in order to do that, I thought a UK tour might give it a real shot in the arm and people who only ever watch it on telly might get the chance to come and scream and shout for their team. So I want to go on a Lions tour. That is number one. But in order, what I don't want is to play, is to roll it to next year and then South Africa can't host the tour and then suddenly the Lions goes 8 years without featuring. And then I think it's in jeopardy.
That's what I mean. The thing is that you and I have got an objective view because we've got no vested interest. Mako needs somewhere to sleep, somewhere warm, he's away from the kids. Your mate runs a tour company. You know, you're
it's a hell of a payday on a Lions tour. There's more glory up for grabs, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
New free stash. Let's not forget that.
Mako, just quickly ask you, because I wanted to know this, because I know that you're a bit of a rugby keeno, like actually at heart. Like I know, you're like a bit of a student of the game. You like watching it. If you were going to take one player on the Lions, an uncapped player who you thought was going to be absolute bollocks, if it went on in South Africa, who would it be? Because I know you would have watched a lot of rugby because you pretend to play it cool.
That's a good question, that, to be fair.
Rhys Sammet, maybe someone like that, or
he's
someone like that, maybe?
He's a young guy coming through, like an Ollie Lawrence.
Yeah, Holly Lawrence would be a good one. But Sam is probably, if you're talking to someone that's just come broken through now, would be someone that back three wingers, you tend to pick young players anyway. Yeah. And he's rapid and he's got something about him. And so he's one. There's no real anyone that jumps out to me, to be honest.
Got to prove it at the sharp end. Got to prove it at the sharp end to get a nod from Mako.
So that's the end of that question then. So basically, no one's good enough to make the tour. Thanks so much.
Yes, actually, there is one, actually. The young WASC kid, Barbary. I'd like to see more of him, whether he plays hooker or back row. I'd like to see, because he's someone that's a bit different. Big ball carrier, big physical boy, and he can move as well. Got big skills about him and knows how to score tries. So he probably, if he does, keeps going the way he is, be someone up there.
Good answer. I love it.
Nice, Mako. Told you he's a keno, Alex. He tries to play it cool. He knows a lot.
Do you know the most extraordinary thing, Mako? You came on here saying there's not a lot to talk about. I reckon we've done 2 hours and there's still so many things that we would love to get into. But I'm conscious of your time. Let's pencil in a second date because it's been a lot of fun, this one. But I just want to finish with sort of you and post-rugby, you know, because I asked the question to Billy, you know, where do you see yourself? And he was very quick to say, you know, I love England and I love what it's given me, but I can't wait to get back to Tonga, etc. And that's where I think he said Australia, actually. Is he married?
Yeah.
Is his wife Australian?
His wife's Australian, yeah.
That's right. But where would you, you know, where are you going to slip into your pipe and slippers, etc.? Where do you see?
No, I think England's the one for me. I think, obviously, with my Mrs. being English as well, it'd be very hard to take her away from here. But for me, having grown up through school here and knowing the opportunities that are here, I'd like my children to have that as well. So, and also, it'd probably be easier for me to get a job in England than it would be anywhere else.
What do you want to do?
The only thing I know for sure is work in a team. I couldn't hack working on my own 5 days a week, sitting at a desk and just doing something individually. I like to work in a team, but whatever that is, I don't know yet. So something to do with sport would be nice.
What about a mattress tester?
If there is a job going around like that, I'd happily take it on. My back's taking a few mattresses, so yeah, it'd be good.
I was thinking we could pencil you in for I'm a Celeb in a few years' time and you just literally snooze your way through to the final and then suddenly, you know, you'd be king of the jungle. Unlike others of us on this show.
If you thought I lost it, Mako, with some of them people, if nobody got the water or tied the shit away or didn't do it, Mako would just be like, you'd see him sitting quite, like head down, and then he'd be like, can you fucking sort it out, you fucking prick? Get the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. That's what you'd hear, I promise you.
Ask, I'm actually surprised you didn't lose your head more, mate, to be honest. Like, I was watching this going, how has he not lost his mind now?
I did, honest to God, though. There's like, I haven't really talked overly about it, but there was moments like I went in that dunny where the curtain, and I honestly sat there, and like, I've never suffered from like mental health issues or like stuff. I've always used a sports psychologist. I've always like delved into stuff. But I was about this close to having a breakdown because I was like, why have I put myself in this situation? Why, like, I can't do anything about it, mate. I honestly had to have like a few moments of like giving myself a Chinese burn and then coming out and being like, yeah, no, it's fine that I'm the only one who's got the water 50 times the fucking day. It's fine, mate. It was so bad. Because you see me like in a team environment, like trying to set standards and being like outspoken, and then to see me going, no, do you know what? We can all just be individuals. It's so good.
That was one. I was like, what's he doing? No, this isn't it. I want the real Hask.
Oh, well, real Hask on TV. I barely work as it is after that. I would never work again if the real me came out.
If you got evicted and done for bullying for being faux Hask, God help us if it was the real deal.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a back for that. Yeah. Am I right in saying your love for Tonga? Because we were talking with David Pocock last week about how, you know, his love for Australia is obvious because it's the country that adopted him and welcomed him, but his heart remains in Zimbabwe, which is where he grew up. And I just wonder, do you feel that sort of split loyalty?
Yeah, I do. I'm obviously always going to be proud of being Tongan, and I love this. What I do now is almost so I can kind of try and make it easier for people in Tonga to try and find a better life, really. There are times where family back home would ask for help, and not too much, but I just try as much as I can to help the community back home. Because when I do go back to Tonga, it's not very nice seeing the country's going in terms of the economy itself is dying, and rugby is not really as good as what it was. So it's sad to see, and you want to just try and help out as much as you can.
It's really interesting. How often do you get back?
I used to go back every summer, but obviously with young families, a bit difficult. And the last time I went back was with me and Mrs. and little, just the older one, for my brother's wedding. That was the last time I've been back. And I'm hoping that if everything goes well, travel's going to be allowed this summer and I can go back again. And just because at the minute, there's only my grandmother there, so still at the minute.
Interesting. Do you talk to your kids about your Tongan heritage? Are they, you know, aware of it, up to speed with it, interested in it?
So I try and try and go do some prayers and stuff with my younger one, but they're both too young to understand what's going on, really. And I think once they're a little bit older, then I try and keep it with them, but it's hard to keep the Tongan tradition now if I can't even do it myself.
So will you make them wrestle head on head when they're old enough to, like, fight to the death?
Oh, yeah. 100%, yeah. I won't even wait that long.
How old are they now?
One is 2 and the other one is 8 months.
Wow.
And can I say, Alex, can I say, they are, well, 2 of the most beautiful children you've ever seen. Like, when I met the youngest one at the wedding, I was, like, looking at Mako's missus, like, there's no way he's made this. No way. It's honestly the cutest baby ever. Kids are always like difficult, but he's so lovely and like well-behaved, isn't he? Well, most of the time, he seems like he is.
Most of the time, yeah. Well, it helps when you have about 70 babysitters, so I don't really have to see the kid sometimes when I see the family. But what do you mean, Hass? Look at me, mate.
I know, but now you've had your lid tightened up and everything else like that. You're looking sharper. You're actually, bizarrely, looking younger, but I wonder if it's a bit like Benjamin Button, because what you looked like 5 years ago versus now, you're definitely better.
It definitely helps that I've looked the same age from 21 to now.
It's that uphill paper round in years gone by. Mako, it's been really, really... I've genuinely enjoyed this one. And I've enjoyed it so much because you don't do a lot of it. Have you survived it? You happy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's been good for me.
Have you enjoyed it?
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. It's been easy. If this is it, then I'll probably do a little bit more, but depending on who want me back.
Yeah, no, we'd love to have you back. And you should get out there and do more of it because, you know, you're an absolute rock star. I love your elder statesman status, and it's well deserved. And I hope there are some very exciting chapters to come in the not too distant future. What's tomorrow bring? What's the rest of the week got in store?
So I've just got rehab, a lot of rehab and weights at the minute with what bikes are. Tomorrow's the same, and I'm very much looking forward to it.
The merry-go-round of a pro.
Don't lie. Don't lie to our fucking listeners, Macko. You're not looking forward to anything apart from the snooze after training.
I can't even do that anymore with the kids.
Oh, God. Or do you, come over to my gaff, or you're always invited up here. Come away for a couple of days. There's a big, there's a sofa that Dozza left an imprint on when we were playing up at Wasps together in the final year, where he used to go, Haska, I'm just going to have a minute, and then be asleep for 5 hours until he woke up and Chloe cooked him dinner. I couldn't believe it. There's just a divot. There's still a divot where Dozza left it. So if you need a place to escape, come up to Haski and Palace.
Thanks, mate.
All aboard Haski and Palace. That is it for the good, the bad, and the rugby this week. Thank you to Hask. Thank you to Macko. Good luck. Go forth and conquer. And I hope we'll see you galloping around in the not-too-distant future. Love to Bills as well when you speak to him.
Thank you very much. Cheers, guys.
Good man. We're going to be back in 7 days' time, where we're going to be joined by arguably one of the great game's greatest superstars of the last decade. It is another two-time World Cup winner. That one could be very interesting indeed. Hold on until then. Be safe in the meantime. All yours, Rob Brydon. Chaps, thank you very much indeed. Have a good rest of your week.
Thank you so much for listening to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. It can't have been easy.